in a place and you have these kind of children who are at this age of mumayyiz or tamiz, which is that age of 9 to 10 years, please cover your ordainments. Please cover your, you know, the beauty parts so that they don't get attracted towards it. They don't start focusing on it. Because after this age, those hormonal changes start happening. But before that, they're already aware of these things.
Right.
So most of the parents starts focusing on their kids when they reach the teenage. And they think that, okay, now is the time to talk to them. Now is the time to tell them.
Right.
Yeah. But that's already late because the child has been looking, noticing and paying attention. And they even notice the difference in behavior. You know?
Especially in our age, dear Sheikh, with the internet and all of the things that you can find on the internet.
On the TV.
And the television as well. Yeah.
And particularly keeping in mind that the TV is also targeting the tweens and teaching them certain behaviors and teaching them how to be.
Just movies, their Sheikh, and music, the lyrics and stuff they sing about it.
Exactly.
It's horrible.
So there's a lot happening on the TV, but let me come back. Probably let's take a quick break and come back and talk about the behaviors, how they notice the difference.
Right. Yeah.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are discussing the age of the hormonal changes in teenagers, namely when they start to feel and develop attractions to the opposite gender. Now, dear Sheikh, just before we went on a quick break, we were mentioning how even the television and adverts and music, they target these teenagers and tweens. Please continue where you left off.
The most important point that I wanted to emphasize was that when the child is around 9 and 10 years old, even though the hormonal changes have not taken effect in him, but he's able to differentiate not just the physical form, but the behavioral pattern of the father and the mother at home. They would see how the mother behaves. She has more love, kindness, and a grace in her behavior.
I would say she's more feminine in her actions, how she dresses and stuff.
And the way she walks, the way she talks, the way
and
she flips her hair.
Exactly.
All that is being noticed. And on the other side, they look at the fathers, that how they are macho and they're even aggressive, the way they talk, the kind of words they use, the language they use, the way they walk, sit, talk. And
they're more manly, which unfortunately in today's age, it has become a derogatory term of calling somebody manly or feminine, but that is what it is, right?
Correct. So now what happens is that this child starts noticing, and then there are hundreds of questions on his mind related to the physical behavior, related to the emotional behavior, related to the attitude and behavioral patterns, right?
Right.
So the child is already noticing all this, right? And he being the child is a boy, he automatically starts noticing that gracefulness in his sisters and mothers, and it's already building attention and attraction in him. With the hormonal changes, this intensifies a lot.
Right.
And that's why you will
see... like steroids.
Exactly. So that's why you will see in a house environment, the daughter is more attached to the father, and the son is more skewed towards mother because they see the opposite behavior in them. So if you look at cultures, different cultures, you would see that, the daughter likes to hang around with father, and maybe after the conditioning that's happening from the TV, this might have changed. But in different cultures, if you look at subcontinent, I've been to Singapore, I've been to Malaysia, I've been to Bangkok, I've lived in India, I've lived in Melbourne. I've noticed all these families, including here in this country, I've noticed different families. And you can clearly see that the girls like to spend more time with the father, particularly...
It's a known fact in the entire world that the daughters always are more
I don't want to say attracted, but more
attached,
closer.
Closer attached to the father. And on the other hand, the sons. This
like
is,
you say, you also this term, you say mama's boy.
Correct.
And the, right.
Correct.
Yeah.
So this starts happening right from age 10. And then this element of hormonal changes kicks in.
But Sheikh, allow me to interrupt you. Just before we go deeper into the subject, just to clarify. This attachment, what does it stem from? Because we have psychologists such as, for example, Freud, who says that it is because they are sexually attracted to their own parents, which has caused a lot of issues. Just
correct.
Please, if you could clarify as a psychologist yourself.
See, Freud's point of view is a very specific and I would say individual point of view, because Freud in his own research has boiled down everything back to sexualism, including a two-year-old child. He says when the child is suckling milk from her, from his or her mother, is basically satisfying his oral sexual needs.
Well,
so
that's quite the
exactly.
far leap.
Uh-huh. So there's something, I would say, something wrong on the upper apartments of Sigmund Freud, because he looks at everything from
I
the sexual point
agree.
Of view. Yeah. But there is another element, that is the personality types. So the boys have a certain personality type, and they see that this gracefulness is missing in the. Let's come back
let's
and
come
discuss
back
here.
Let's continue this after a quick break.
There's a little
break.
More explanation here, so right. Let's come back after a break
yes.
here.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات.
Regarding the sixth verse of Surah At-Tahrim, the 66th Surah of the Holy Quran, that is, O you who have faith, save yourselves and your families from a fire. Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam said, save your families from fire by enjoining them to do good and forbidding them from evil deeds.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Just before we went on a break, we were discussing why it is that girls, for example, are more attached to their fathers and boys are more attached to their mothers. And now, Sheikh, you were saying, please continue where you left off.
The personality types. We were
right.
talking about the personality types. If you run a quick search on internet, you would see that there are four personality types. There's perfect melancholy, there's popular sanguine, there's phlegmatic, and there is choleric. These are different personality types, and you would see it as a general rule. There are opposite personalities in this. A choleric is opposite of phlegmatic. Sanguine is opposite of perfect melancholy. And mostly they get attracted towards each other and then they end up being together and even getting married.
So it's the opposites attract.
That's true to a certain extent. And this is where you would... Why does this happen? This is a very fundamental and necessary element to understand. What happens is a popular sanguine is a personality who's a little, absent-minded, if I want to call it. So when they walk into house, they kick their shoes in one direction and socks in another direction, throw the bag in one corner and get to, to the room to have lunch, right?
Right.
To the dinner table or lunch table to have lunch. Whereas a melancholy, a perfect melancholy is a personality who walks into the house, takes off the shoes, rolls his socks, puts the right socks into the right shoe, left sock into the left shoe, put the shoe in the shoe rack, put the bag in the right place, goes to the lunch table, washes his hands, and then, in a most composed way, sits on the table to have his lunch. Now, when a sanguine looks at a perfect melancholy, he says, my God, I'm missing all this in my life. This, attitude of being organized, everything being in a right thing at the right place and everything being so perfect, I'm missing it, all this in my life.
Is that subconsciously happening?
Yes, that's subconsciously happening right. because somewhere they feel that I want that, but I don't have it. So if I marry him, if I associate with him, if I partner with him, I will get all those in my life because that's missing in my life. On
right.
the other hand, the popular sanguine is a fun-loving person. And perfect melancholy is not that kind of a... Because for perfect melancholy, everything has to be organized. Even the fun. So he has a plan for picnic. He'll say, wake up at 8, get into car by 9, drive for 2 hours, spend so many hours there. This is how we play. This is how we don't play. And so everything is time-mentioned and time-bound.
Right. time management, basically.
So more than time management, everything has to be organized and scheduled. So if you say that I'm going to be at a picnic spot for 2 hours, you cannot go 2 hours, 15 minutes. It upsets him.
Right.
But what he sees is that this sanguine personality has all the fun and joy and happiness and always smiling and laughing. He says, I'm missing that in my life. So let me partner with him so that that person brings all this happiness, joy and fun in my life. And I bring that organized behavior and together we can lead a perfect life.
Sheikh, so just a question about these different personalities that you yourself mentioned. Are these theories or are these basically confirmed?
These are realities. These are based on individual temperaments, based on where you live, the ambience you're brought up into, the kind of food you eat, the month you were born, the environment you are into. All these factors affect, and it's not permanent. They are changeable. So let's discuss in our next episode, because the point that we were discussing was that why are boys attracted towards mother?
Right.
They are more attached to the mother. And why are daughters more attached to the father? So we'll come back and discuss this.
Sounds perfect there, Sheikh. Let's continue this discussion in the next program. I thank you for contributing to this discussion and also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. If our dear listeners have any suggestions, feedback or some comments, please contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir. Alternatively, you can also visit our website, parstoday.com. You can also find us on various social media websites, such as on Twitter and Instagram, under the call handle of Call of Islam Radio. Thank you for tuning in.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
People in the port city of Karachi hit the streets to voice their outrage at the ouster of the elected government. The protesters say the US conspired against their country. While Imran Khan never sought sore ties with any nation during his short-lived premiership,
former Prime Minister Imran Khan has accused Biden administration in Washington for toppling his government in Pakistan, for not towing US's line on foreign policy.
Khan said that his life is in danger, but he prioritizes Pakistan's independence over his life.
Imran Khan had twice tweeted, or in fact more, but he had a clear clear message for the US administration that we are partners in peace. We will always be partners in peace. We are partners in trade. We'll always be partners in trade with the whole world, with everybody. But we will not take dictation from anybody.
I'm here specifically to do my part in wanting and executing the Pakistan that we all want. And I think Imran Khan represents a vision of that Pakistan. And I personally, honestly think it's not his job alone to do this. It's our job, our responsibility to come out and do this for ourselves. That's why I'm here.
We've gathered here because of the sovereignty of Pakistan, and we want Pakistan to get justice and Imran Khan to get justice, and we don't believe in the fake government.
Khan says U.S. diplomats started meeting some Pakistani officials 4 months ago, adding that Pakistan's ambassador to the U.S. was threatened.
We've gathered here to fight for a more democratic Pakistan, to fight for a free and independent Pakistan, to fight for a Pakistan that doesn't get bullied. That is our main reason for being here, for standing up for Pakistan, its sovereignty and its integrity.
We're just here to support Imran Khan in this freedom fight. We are here to just, we don't accept the imported government. We're here to support our Prime Minister Imran Khan. He came here with the elected votes, our votes.
It's a protest for democracy. It's a protest for justice and for rights and human rights. The world
people choose their own leaders. Every citizen has a choice, has a right to choose their own people who they want to govern over them.
Khan has called for a snap election and urged an investigation into what he calls the US's plot to topple his government. He has become the first Pakistani prime minister to be removed from office through a non-confidence vote by the parliament. Mohammad Turi, Karachi.
Palestinians rallied in the besieged Gaza Strip on Sunday to mark the 48th anniversary of Palestinian Prisoners' Day. Palestinian Prisoners' Day commemorates the first Palestinian prisoner exchange deal with Tel Aviv in 1974. Statistics show that Israeli forces have arrested nearly 1 million Palestinians since 1967. The rally was organized by all Palestinian factions who came together to express their solidarity with the prisoners in Israeli jails.
On Palestinians Prisoners' Day, we call on all international organizations, especially the Red Cross, to fulfill their obligations towards Palestinian prisoners. The Red Cross has failed to protect Palestinian prisoners and has remained silent while Palestinian prisoners continue to suffer inside Zionist jails.
Israel currently holds around 5,000 Palestinians in its prisons and detention centers, including women and minors. Protesters shouted slogans against Israel and expressed their unwavering support for the prisoners.
For us, every day is a prisoner's day because Palestinian prisoners are our heroes and they live in our hearts and minds. We pray for them, especially during this holy month of Ramadan, to remain strong in the face of their Zionist captors.
Palestinian prisoners have gone on hunger strike several times in recent years to draw attention to their plight. Activists called on Palestinian armed wings to capture more Israeli soldiers in order to swap them with Palestinian prisoners.
Only capturing more Israeli soldiers can bring about the liberation of Palestinian prisoners. Armed resistance is the best option to help secure the release of the prisoners because our enemies only understand the language of force.
According to prisoners' advocacy groups, Palestinian prisoners continue to face a wide range of human rights violations in Israeli jails and detention centers.
As they mark Palestinian Prisoner Day, people here accuse the international community of turning a blind eye to the continued Israeli crimes against thousands of Palestinian prisoners. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
The French presidential election was trending as an easy victory for the incumbent, Emmanuel Macron, until the unrest in Ukraine began. Macron's insistence on long-term sanctions for Russia exploded already high inflation. That's resulted in widespread hardship, resentment, and tough assessments of Macron's economic record.
It's clear that Macron has not improved the quality of life for the French. He's not responsible for all the problems he's had to deal with, but it's clear there's a big difference between what he's promised and what he's delivered.
The French election may come down to this. Who do voters feel will protect the average person from the economically explosive effect of long-term sanctions on Russia over the unrest in the Ukraine? It's not a question the mainstream media wants to discuss, but it is top of mind for the average person. Polls show the race is now a dead heat, with a soaring Marine Le Pen of the National Rally taking an opposite tack, promising to oppose Russia energy sanctions, which are wreaking havoc with gas, heating, and food prices. As the challenger, Le Pen doesn't have a record to defend, and she's escaping anger over the economic crisis.
Macron has absolutely not done a good job on protecting our purchasing power. The middle class feels that Macron has contempt for the middle class, and they also feel a great contempt for the neoliberal globalist banker Macron.
Macron's far-right economic policies provoked the unprecedented yellow vest protests in 2018. He only made minor concessions before turning to brutal repression. And the coronavirus crisis only aggravated economic inequalities.
Macron needed to go much further in his efforts to reduce prices. It's unbearable to go to the supermarket these days. Even people who make an honest salary say that they are having trouble.
Abstention may reach record highs because many voters wonder if Le Pen would actually deliver on her populist economic promises. Her party has historically been aligned with neoliberalism as well. Ramin Mazahari, Paris.
Ramadan 2022 is underway, and Muslims are fasting from dawn to dusk. But to those who are fasting for the first time, it is going to be the most different and memorable Ramadan. Tehran Municipality has invited more than 800 first-time fasters to this iftar meal to celebrate their religious coming of age. In Islam, a person would be responsible to perform their religious tasks when they reach puberty. And that's when they're duty-bound to fast during Ramadan.
We invited 850 kids today to teach them that fasting is more than a duty, but a bliss. Here, they learn about the benefits of fasting when it comes to regulating their digestive system. And more importantly, they learn that fasting polishes their soul as it boosts their spirituality.
In Muslim societies, Ramadan is known as the month of God, and Muslims believe they're invited to a divine party. That's why in the holy month, humanitarian activities and charity works get supercharged, with people trying to do whatever they can to help the needy.
Muslims view Ramadan as not just a time to refrain from eating and drinking. They regard it as a chance to push the limits on humanity and become the best version of yourself as a human being. And that's what organizers here try to teach first-time fasters. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Tensions are high in the occupied territories amid a recent increase in crackdown on Palestinians. Regime forces attacked worshippers in Al-Aqsa Mosque on Friday. Scores of Palestinians were wounded in the clashes. Around 400 people were also arrested. Muslim nations as well as resistance groups have condemned Tel Aviv. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation called on the international community to force Israel to end its aggression. Iran said Friday's events in Muslims' third holiest site show that the Palestinian resistance is alive and thriving, and Israel is in a state of desperation. Analysts believe that Tel Aviv is intentionally increasing tensions to take control of Al-Aqsa Mosque.
We think that the Israelis are escalating the whole situation in the West Bank in order, at least in Jerusalem, in order to control the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And that was the aim for the settlers groups who announced many times that they wanted, to get into Al-Aqsa Mosque and practice some of their own religion kind of practices. If they did such an act, definitely that would lead to a war.
The clashes came after 3 weeks of deadly tensions in the occupied territories. Tel Aviv has deployed more forces to the West Bank and conducted raids and house searches there almost every day. This has resulted in the deaths and injuries of dozens of Palestinians. Israel's Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has given Israeli forces a free hand in their operations. Many believe that the latest escalation could turn into an uprising or a new intifada in Palestine.
Palestinian experts are warning that they could return back, let's say, to more clashes, more escalation. These killings by the Israeli forces and this escalation could any time turn into an uprising or an intifada. No one can tell, especially that the Israelis are saying they will not end their operation. It will continue.
Palestinians have also increased their operations in response to the crackdown. Since March 22nd, they have conducted several stabbing and shooting operations, including one in Tel Aviv, leaving 14 Israelis dead. The increase in anti-Israel operations in the occupied territories show that Palestinians have reached a conclusion that they should decide their own fate, especially after several Arab countries normalized ties with Israel. Palestinians believe that resistance against occupation is the only way they have to achieve their goals.
People in the besieged Gaza Strip held a rally following the Friday prayers to express their solidarity with Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Angry protesters shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and vowing to sacrifice their lives for the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Earlier, the Israeli regime forces stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied Old City of Al-Quds, injuring more than 150 worshippers during the second Friday of the fasting holy month of Ramadan. Hamas movement has warned the Israeli regime against violations at Al-Aqsa Mosque.
We are prepared to wage wars for the sake of Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. We will continue to the equation of arms for arms and blood for blood, and that Al-Quds is a red line that must not be crossed. The Israeli occupation will bear for responsibility for any repercussions as a result of its attacks against the worshippers. We are ready for all scenarios to stop this enemy and protect our people.
Protesters in the Gaza Strip vow to increase their solidarity with Al-Quds until the removal of all Israeli violations in the holy city.
The Palestinian people are united for the sake of Al-Quds, and we will not abandon Al-Aqsa Mosque. We will fight for the sake of Al-Quds and sacrifice our lives for it.
The Israeli regime has stepped up its deadly acts of aggression in Al-Quds since the beginning of Ramadan. Palestinian resistance factions warned the Israeli regime of dire consequences if Israeli forces continue to attack Al-Quds.
The Israeli is sending a clear message to the Zionist enemy that it must understand that we will not sit idle while it attacks Al-Quds. The Zionist enemy is playing with fire, and it will only explode in its face.
The Al-Aqsa Mosque is Islam's third holiest site and has been under Israeli occupation since 1967.
Palestinians in the besieged coastal enclave say that they will use all forms of resistance against the Israeli occupation until the liberation of Al-Quds. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
The latest second-round polls in France continue to show that Emmanuel Macron's once comfortable lead has vanished to make the race a dead heat. The mainstream media's insistence on talking about Islamophobia and xenophobia has already produced near-record abstention, but the unrest in Ukraine has forced real issues back to the fore. First the Great Recession, then the Age of Austerity, then the Yellow Vest Civil War, then the coronavirus era, and now an era of Russian sanctions? Devoted Europhile Macron remains committed to a long-term blockade of Russia, which requires years of economic suffering for the average household. Analysts say that voters may prefer Le Pen's France First insistence that any Russia sanctions not bankrupt French homes and businesses.
She's a nationalist, and she's protectionist in some way. She's also protective. She has understood that it was important to sound as someone that would be here to take care of electors. It's whether it's for good or bad, but a lot of French people want to feel that they have a protective hand in government.
Le Pen has also promised to pull out of NATO's command center to restore French independence. Macron is relying on a demonization campaign of the National Front, just like in 2017. When the number two reason people voted for Macron was to block them from coming to power.
He is, in a way, a president by default. The number one paradox of this campaign is that, indeed, we've had 5 years of a president who's managed to be disliked by almost everybody and who yet is favorite to be reelected.
Back when he thought victory was assured, Macron promised to raise the retirement age to 65 this fall. That may cost him key older and left-wing votes. He's backtracking and saying that he's now willing to listen to the ideas and desires of voters. Do left-wing voters believe Macron's claims that he's now willing to govern by consensus? Does France view Le Pen differently after 5 years of Macronism? The winning candidate may be the one who proves that they have changed the most since the very different year of 2017. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Arms trafficking at Italy's main sea dispatch points is ongoing in breach of international and Italian laws. Dockers have found U.S.-made tanks in the hold of a Saudi ship docked at the port of Genoa. Our correspondent Max Civili has this report from Rome.
Italian ports have often been central to international arms trafficking over the past years.
cargoes of weapons destined for war-torn countries have been intercepted in various seaports, including those of Livorno, Naples, and Gioia Tauro. On Wednesday, dockers belonging to the autonomous port workers collective CALP found tanks in the hold of the Saudi Arabian ship Bahri Jeddah, which is moored in the Italy's northern port of Genoa. CALP dockers have taken photos of the weapons placed on board the ship and published them on the collective's website.
The ship carries weapons and ammunition. We spotted M1 Abrams tanks already armed, produced in the US. On the deck of the ship, there are also containers full of ammunition and explosives in plain sight. It is extremely dangerous and against international and Italian laws.
About 10 days ago, CALP dockers, together with rights associations and pacifist movements, staged a protest demanding the port authority more transparency on ships' cargoes transiting in Genoa. Dockers have said the demands have not yet been addressed.
These ships carrying cargo of arms and explosives are not just operating in breach of international and Italian laws. Cargo of this sort is extremely dangerous for the dockers and for thousands of people living in the surroundings of the port of Genoa. In addition to that, ships are moored near a chemical warehouse and an oil depot. You can imagine the safety implications of that.
The Weapon Watch Observatory has also found that the number of Italian aircraft carriers that are transporting weapons towards Poland has dramatically increased over the past weeks. Rome has been sending tons of arms and humanitarian aid to Ukraine since the start of the conflict there. The arms industry in Italy is prospering. 10 years ago, Rome was the 10th largest weapons producer in the world. Today it stands as the 6th. Furthermore, following the start of the conflict in Ukraine, the Mario Draghi government has honored a pledge made to NATO a few years ago, rising military spending from 1.4% to 2% of GDP by 2028. Max Civili, Rome.
Millions of EU citizens are really starting to feel the pinch. Inflation in the 19-country eurozone is currently at 7.5%. The European Central Bank, ECB, wants inflation to be at just below 2%. It means the cost of living is out of control.
The impact of the war on the economy will depend on how the conflict evolves, on the effect of current sanctions, and on possible further measures.
On Thursday, the ECB said energy prices have increased by 45% in the past 12 months. Business and consumer confidence has fallen through the floor due to the conflict in Ukraine and sanctions against Russia. There are major supply issues. The cost of living is rising, but wages are not, according to the ECB. We have been speaking to EU citizens.
We have also a lot of refugees in Poland, so it's also a huge problem now for our country, for the healthcare system and every other area.
We have to take the car, we're trying to take everybody at the same place and try to share with other peoples, and of course everything in the food also. I mean, it's a big problem. Yeah,
when I drive with a car or something, and the prices went so high, as a student I cannot pay it.
If the Ukrainian conflict continue, there will be problem, because Russian and Ukraine are two of the most important food producers, so there will be problem about food price.
And as a business person, are you worried about losing your business?
Yeah, it's stopping if you don't have the parts to construct your thing.
The next update from the European Central Bank is scheduled to take place on the 9th of June. So how badly could things possibly deteriorate for EU citizens between now and then? To quote the head of the bank, Christine Lagarde, who knows? Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Western governments have been heavily subsidizing their own fossil fuel industries, even as they exhort much poorer countries to do more to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. But the full extent of these subsidies has been hidden by the methods used to measure them. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Jayati Ghosh Ryder. This article is published under the heading The Outrageous and Largely Hidden $5.9 trillion annual subsidy to the fossil fuel industry that is killing people. Stay tuned for more. The latest report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change should terrify policymakers and ordinary people around the world. The IPCC warns that some disastrous climate outcomes are now likely to occur, not in the distant future, but within the next 15 years or even the next decade. While this may be understandable, the Ukraine crisis has also exposed the excessively short-term policy orientation of Western governments. Many have quickly reneged on even the relatively meager and obviously inadequate climate pledges they made only a few months ago at the United Nations Climate Change Conference in Glasgow. The world is rapidly running out of time to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius and avert a climate catastrophe. U.S. President Joe Biden's administration, after unsuccessfully imploring Saudi Arabia to increase oil production, has promised to release 1 million barrels a day from the U.S. government's strategic reserves for the next 6 months. In Europe, which has been hit much harder by the fallout from the war because of its heavy reliance on natural gas, the talk is not just of more nuclear energy, but also of reviving coal-based power. Coal is by far the dirtiest fossil fuel, and rich countries routinely pillory India for using it. Only those who previously swallowed Western governments in sincere green rhetoric rather than examining the reality should be surprised by this turn of events. These governments have been heavily subsidizing their own fossil fuel industries, even as they exhorted much poorer countries to do more to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. But the full extent of these subsidies has been hidden by the methods used to measure them. The standard way to measure government support for fossil fuel production or consumption is to look at direct budgetary transfers and subsidies, as well as tax breaks for this sector. Using this method, the OECD and the International Energy Agency estimate that governments across 52 advanced and emerging economies, accounting for about 90% of global fossil fuel energy supply, provided fossil fuel subsidies worth an average of $555 billion per year from 2017 to 2019. This support declined to $345 in 2020, mainly because of the collapse in fuel prices and drop in consumption during the COVID-19 pandemic. But even before the Ukraine crisis, there were fears that rebounding fuel prices could push up subsidies as the global economy recovered. Those fears were more than borne out. It turned out that the bleakest estimates massively understand the actual fossil fuel subsidies the government provide. In a recent study, the International Monetary Fund devised a more comprehensive measure that includes both explicit subsidies or undercharging for supply costs. The implicit subsidies or undercharging for environmental costs and foregone consumption taxes. The IMF estimated that global fossil fuel subsidies in 2020 totaled $5.9 trillion, more than 10 times the OECD-IEA estimate. This is not surprising. Implicit subsidies accounted for 92% of the total. Under both methodologies, India is a heavy subsidizer of fossil fuels, although lower-income countries can be partly accused given the high cost of green energy transition. But other countries' rankings change in interesting ways when implicit subsidies are considered. These important numbers highlight the extent to which government intervention is skewing prices and therefore market incentives in favor of fossil fuels rather than against them. While governments were supporting the fossil fuel industry to the tune of $5.9 trillion in 2020, the IPCC estimates that global climate finance from both public and private sources totaled only about $640 billion that year. Given this huge disparity, no one should be shocked at the fossil fuel industry's continued resilience. The world is rapidly running out of time to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius and avert a climate catastrophe, but the global economic system and Western governments appear unable to take the threat seriously.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. I am a Muslim. Islamite. Islamite. Allah my Lord. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. How are you? I hope wherever you are, you're fine and you're doing well. In case you're not doing well in this holy land, we pray for your well-being, inshallah. You are listening to the IRIB English Radio. This is the Youth Station. I am your host, Zainab Askari, and I have with me today a very special guest. She's also Zainab, so we have two Zainabs here.
Assalamu alaikum. I'm Zainab Mousavi, and today I have the privilege of participating in this beautiful and nice discussion.
Yeah, Zainab, how are you?
Thank you. I'm well, and I'm so energetic for having this discussion with you, dear Zainab.
Same here. So since you're Zainab, it gives me more energy, like we are two Zainabs today.
Let's yes, see what you're going to teach us. Yes, that's quite interesting for me too.
Yeah. So what do you think? What are we going to discuss today? Shall we discuss religion?
Sure, definitely. Yes, I'm ready.
Okay. Why do people need religion?
Well, I think this kind of question has got lots of answers. And in order to provide an appropriate answer for this question, you must render lots of answers which are highly connected to one another.
True.
However, after thinking about such an issue, I can reach two types of answers which can be somehow used as a justification for those people who do not believe in any religion or God.
All right.
Considering myself talking to an atheist person, I would raise these two justifications. In question, when I'm asked why I use a religion and why am I considered as a religious person,
true,
I would definitely say that I personally prefer to be religious and use and select a religion for myself to be somehow controlled by that religion. You know, when talking about a religion, I'm not going to talk about Islam.
You're talking about religion in general.
Yes, all religion right. In general. When saying that, you know, religion is something that sets ethical framework for your life.
True.
We have several concepts in our lives, such as love, such as respect, such as marriage, lots of things.
True.
And religion is the thing that gives value to these concepts. For example, it shows us what is good and what is bad. Mm-hmm. And that could be considered as a great help for me as a person who does not know. Of course, I can refer to my insects, but when talking about religion and when talking about several concepts, definitely religion can come and help me doing the right thing I want to do. For example, as I said, respect, love, marriage, these are the things that that religion, in fact, respects and gives them value. And on the other hand, there are several things like backbiting, like lying, like, for example, murder, that are debunked by the religion.
Okay.
And I am told that I must not, for example, break somebody's heart. Mm-hmm. So I might just joke and just talk to you, and through joking, even not intentionally, I might say something that you don't like and I might break your heart. But when I have a religion and when I believe in God, here
you have
I want
this
to refer
set
to Islam.
Of rules that tell you, like, to take care of others'
yes,
hearts.
Definitely. About Islam, when I know that God has told me not to break other people's hearts,
okay,
what we call as haqqun nas.
All right. Is haqqun nas?
Haqqun nas, it's really about respecting other people. When you do something that might affect other people,
okay,
in a bad way, that could be a responsibility for you.
Yeah.
Not to hurt anybody in any way. And in case you do such a thing, you would be responsible in front of the person.
We'll be talking about that. Here we need to take a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio. Welcome back. You're listening to the IRIB English Radio. This is the Youth Station, and here are two Zainabs discussing about the need of religion. So Zainab, you were talking about the need of religion. You said your own perspective.
Yes, and I want you to say your own opinion as well.
All right. Religion is a set of rules that you follow throughout your life, and I think not only Islam, every religion has got a set of rules. And it's not the people today, like, you know, who are following religion. People have been following set of rules, basically, from the very beginning. They are following now and they will be following in the future as well.
Definitely.
Because a set of rule tells you the way of life. And now, depending on which way of life you want to go through, then you select a perfect religion for yourself, which gives you a set of rules. And now the question, why there is need of it? I think a human being materialistically has not developed yet. You know,
yes.
Like in terms of materialism, we are day by day, we have not known our body yet completely. For example, there are certain cancers that are untreated. There are certain diseases that are not being treated yet. That means we don't know our body yet.
Yes.
Who knows it? Who
the
knows
our body? The person who has created it.
The creator, exactly.
Yes, the creator,
so, yeah.
Yes.
I think even if materialistically we are seeing, we don't know ourselves better.
Yeah.
So the more with the passage of time, we get to know about ourselves, we get to know about our surroundings, we get to know how to live a better life. Like, for example, the tech. We did not have this tech 10 years back, what we have today. 10 years back, people suffered a little. And now 10 years after, they are in a little relaxed mood. Mm-hmm. But with the passage of time, this materialistic things gets covered up about the human body himself, like to let him grow physically. And a human being has two kinds of growth. It's not just physical growth. It's a spiritual growth as well. So for physical growth as well, I think it's dependent on religion. And
yes, definitely.
Because the creator knows about him, what he created.
Yes, definitely. Yes, you're right.
And about spiritual growth as well, to go towards perfection.
Yes.
The main goal is to reach the perfection. I think there's a need of these set of rules as called as religion. You see, like people just take an example of traffic. Those who do not follow the rules, they face an accident, they face fines, and so on and so forth. So faith, in the same way, I think if we do not follow a set of rules in our lives, we are going to face the same things.
The same difficulties.
Yeah.
Yes, you're
so
right.
It's very necessary to follow a set of rules. And now it depends which kind of set of rules you want to select. And for me, Islam is the best one, so I have chosen Islam as a set of rules to follow a better life.
Yes, and what I like about Islam is that it's about its focus on spirituality.
True.
You know, those people who do not follow any religion, they do not have spiritual connection with anybody, with creator.
True.
But especially we as Muslims, we have our spiritual connection with God, and we have the belief that God is superior to everything.
True.
And definitely such a point of view would influence our life for better. And we would just have lots of things done in a better way than those who do not believe in God or those who are atheists.
Uh-huh. You know, Zainab, we have a lot of shrines over here since we are living in Qom, and we go to Mashhad as well. We have a shrine over there. And you recently came from Karbala.
Yes.
And like you said rightly, that we need sometimes the people who do not believe in religions suffer more from depression, distress,
definitely,
and a lot
yes,
of things.
That's the point. Yes,
but
you're right.
How much did you get relieved since you came from a shrine recently?
Definitely. Yes, about the youth in Karbala and Najaf. You're quite right, and you're just saying the exact point. You know, when we were in Karbala or in any other holy shrine, those people who are religious and attend to such places, you know, you can feel their positive energy there. They're so enthusiastic about going to the shrine. When you stand for just a few minutes and see people coming and talking to the holy shrine, that gives you lots of energy. And that's quite interesting for me, at least, because they go and talk to the shrine in a way that they're talking to their friends. And even those people who are illegible, and those people who cannot speak just formally and correctly, even those people, they speak in their own language with the shrine, and you just feel the positive energy, and you just feel
the hope,
happiness,
the hope they have.
Yes, yes, and yes, and their hope is not compatible.
I mean, I have
other
seen
people
who do not know how to talk. Youth is, you know, mostly stressed, and at that age, you're not able to discuss a lot of things with your family, a lot of things with your friends.
Yes.
Here you need someone to talk your heart to.
Yes, yes, that's quite right. And the youth people, when they come, as I said, they're just laughing. They have so high spirituality and they talk to their holy shrine. They say their prayers. They, you know, even in cases when they have difficulties in their own lives, they ask their help. Mm-hmm. And I think that has influence on their lives. The young Muslims' life quite different from those who are atheists. There is a world of difference between the spirituality of a young Muslim person and an atheist one.
I have especially seen the smiling faces coming out.
Yes.
Like if a depressed face is going in and a smiling face is coming out with this hope that he has talked his heart to someone when he believes in a religion, when he believes in God, and when he believes in spirituality.
Yes, and they regard going to their holy shrines, they regard it as a recess and as a remedy.
This is IRIB English Radio. You are listening to Youth Station.
Imagine a Muslim youth who has faced a difficulty in his or her life. And on the other hand, an atheist who again faced difficulties in his or her life. The atheist person might go to his or her friend, talk to them, or just listen to music. I don't know. Go and
do different things. He may not come to shrine or something like that.
And he might escape his life. Consider doing this as a remedy for him or herself. But a Muslim person, what would he do? As soon as a young Muslim person meets a problem or a difficulty, he goes to the holy shrine and talks to his or her holy imam as a grave source of energy, not just energy, as a person who we know that the holy person listens to us and he prays for us.
And as a connection between you and God, actually.
Yes, definitely. As I said, the spiritual connection. For example, my difficulties might be things that nobody knows about them. My concerns might be so personal that I cannot share them with anybody else. But with my holy imam, I don't have such things. And I feel so comfortable with him or her. I will share my thoughts and my difficulties. I would say prayers there. I would even cry. And I personally believe that sharing my thoughts and my difficulties with this holy person would make the situation better. And they will definitely say prayers for me and wish me luck and ask God to help me.
All right. So I think, and apart from all these talking your heart to taking out your depression and all, religion helps you in much, 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 many more things. Like in youth, especially, you are invited to so many sins through so many sources.
Yeah.
And if you have a religion, and if you hold it very firm and strong, Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, says that a youth who avoids sins because of God is so much close to Allah. Because it's in youth age that you get invited to different sins through different ways that you cannot even, you know, tell to people, you cannot discuss with people. And here, religion is the best way of life that guides you what to do, when to do. It's the best counselor, basically.
Yes.
So
yes,
thank you so much, Zainab Sadat, for being with us.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to the Youth Station. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Thank you.